to be honest, I was ready at the end of day one to go, let's vote. I mean, the evidence is all there. It's what we knew. It was as bad as I think most of us thought. In fact, I think it was a little bit worse. And the Republicans didn't help. Did not help one bit. In fact, the one guy wanted to get into a colloquy with Schiff, and I'm going, what about the witness? I completely go, you don't even want to talk to the witness. Just wants to have some banter with Schiff. I thought was really, really very twisted. And again, I think the best line goes to Vermont Representative Peter Welch, who after, you know, whatever Jim Jordan's on, he should be tested. There's something seriously wrong with him. But after, you know, Jordan went on about his, you know, we got to go after the person responsible, that whistleblower. Welch pointed out very, very correctly, the person responsible, we'd love to have come testified, Donald Trump. Duh. Pretty simple. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the day's events, I've asked our good friend Scott Dworkin to come talk with us. He's the co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, also host of the Dworkin Report. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I am good, but I'm looking at today going, is there more that we need to know? I mean, didn't we just about cover it today?
Nah, I mean, I need some more, you know, 18-hour work days in my life. I can't just, you know, be slogging along at 16-hour work days. I think that we scratched the surface. There's a lot of information out there. There's more than one call. There's more than one whistleblower. It's been corroborated now and not really challenged by Republicans either on any facts. They just tried to distract today. It was pretty pathetic. But, you know, the good news is I think this was a real turning point. You may not feel it, but I see it very clearly. Today was a turning point where reality started to sink in, and their games and their catchphrases and their slogans are not working. They did not dominate the media landscape. They got crushed. They did not dominate online. They got absolutely crushed. And, you know, I think it's because it's real people standing up and speaking out against this nonsense. And people have had enough. I think that this is just scratching the surface of this scandal. It's much worse than it's presented right now. Right now, it's a very simple, you know, very easy to explain. But, you know, it seems like the entire story behind it is him and Putin made some kind of deal. He then stalled the aid to Ukraine as long as he possibly could, which led to soldiers dying. And him trying to leverage that taxpayer money, bribe Ukraine into investigating Americans. And it's just like, okay, so if they want to allow a country like Russia and Ukraine to maybe help him out during elections, does that mean Democrats can get help from everyone else? Because I'm sure there's a lot of countries that would want to help them, but it's just not legal. It's not right, and it's un-American. And I think, you know, again, I think today, Friday, next week, I think it's going to change a lot of minds on impeachment. And we already have more than half the country on board.
But so. is it going to change the minds of the people who, and I hate to put it this way, but of the people who matter in this, which are those people in the Senate who I don't believe are going to vote to convict him. But, you know, maybe once all the evidence is presented, and maybe once, if we the American people rise up, maybe they find a conscience. But, you know, right now they seem to be the only ones who aren't paying attention. In fact, Lindsey Graham and the lot said they weren't even going to watch.
You know, after 1,000-plus days of pushing for impeachment, you know, I can say that it's everybody's told me that's impossible. That's never going to happen. In a lot of different fashions, there's never going to be a special prosecutor. Flynn's never going to be fired. you know, there's a lot of different nevers. He's never going to be impeached. He is going to be impeached now. Whether or not he's removed, we're going to push for it. But, you know, we're not, we already are pushing for that and driving phone calls and letters towards Congress, especially the Senate side of things. But yeah, it's all about pressure. And, you know, the second they think they're not going to get reelected or they're going to be stuck attached to this treasonous act for the rest of their lives, Republicans, I'm not sure if you knew this, but a lot of them are willing to turn on each other very quickly and act like they never even met Trump. So I could see that happening where it's a rip off the Band-Aid kind of thing. But they already want to approach it. I mean, what I'm told is that the Senate trial, when it would get to that, would last at least 2 months. So they're going to be forced to take it seriously already. I think pressure is working in that respect, but we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that there's some conscience in that party. Last night we had Joe Walsh, former congressman and Republican presidential candidate, on the program. And you know, he talked about, you know, him seeing Donald Trump as a clear and present danger, as someone who is demeaning and destroying the office. And he claims that there are other Republicans out there who view Trump in the same light.
Yeah, and I think the fear is starting to wear down on the Republican end of things, where they're like, this boogeyman is not as scary as we thought he was, because his threats, his intimidation, scare tactics, all of that is just adding up into full nonsense. It really is not as effective as it used to be. No matter how shocking something it is that he does, no matter how intentionally stupid something he does is, he doesn't get it, and I don't think he ever will. But I truly believe, I still am going to stick with my, you know, when this is still going on and people are uncovering, once they really start to turn on him, and it's like, it's very obvious, I think he'll figure out a plea deal and resign.
You're going with resign. And we've had this conversation before. I just don't see his ego allowing him to do that. But, you know, whatever gets him out, I'm at this point, you know, for the good of the country, move him along.
We're working as if he's on the ballot. We have to assume that way. We have to work as if he's on the ballot while working also on his impeachment and the public perception surrounding that. I'm really glad that major news organizations are taking things like online organizing very seriously, as they should. Right. That's why Trump invests so much money. People spend most of their time on social media outside of watching TV, and even during watching TV. Like, people don't realize the effect that social media actually has on your real life. And I think we finally are starting to recognize that. We didn't want to admit it before, that we could be vulnerable through our social media, that they could use that, foreign adversaries could use that against us to figure out our profile, to find what makes us tick, so that they can provoke negative thoughts or negative acts out of people via the internet. And so it's new, you know, it's warfare 2.0. And we've got to adjust to that. But now we're prepared for 2020, at least on the civilian side of things. I'm not sure about the government.
But, you know, today the only argument that I saw that was anything close to a defense put forth by Republicans came out of Jim Jordan, who, you know, the argument was, well, you know, the phone call happened, the aid still went, there was, the Ukrainian president didn't say anything, was amiss, it was just 55 days, you know, we were just checking him out to see if he was, quote unquote, the real deal. That was really the only cogent argument that I saw the entire day coming out of Republicans, as a justification for what happened. Now, when you peel all that back, you realize that, well, you know, that aid happened only after the whistleblower's report became known. So, of course, you know, it's now been exposed. It's now cover-up time. But, you know, but that was the only defense that I saw all day.
And the delay itself was criminal. The planning for the delay was criminal. The planning for taking that away was criminal. There's a lot of conspiring acts where they're getting together and figuring out how they can break the law. And just those acts alone is enough. Attempted robbery is a thing. Attempted murder is a thing. You know, you can be charged for planning, or you don't have to execute it. You don't actually have to rob the bank. But, you know, if you're planning it and you're caught and there's ample evidence, I mean, you know, you should still get charged for the attempted crime. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people are, I guess they haven't learned in Trump land yet, that he doesn't care who you are. He will throw you under the bus immediately. They've been talking a lot about Giuliani and Pence and Perry. And it's just the more and more Pence comes up, the more and more he looks like a patsy that's going to go down. But I can tell you this, before, if Trump were to ever go down, there's no way that Pence stays in that White House. Trump will throw Pence under the bus before he goes anywhere.
Which is why this week I said that with Nikki Haley coming out with her book and her strong endorsement of Trump, that she was either vying to replace Pence or to be the next Gerald Ford.
Yeah, I think both. You know, she's going to try and play both fields because she can't go too anti-Trump. But, I mean, it was kind of outlandish how she was trying to attack members of his own administration as if they were leftist, like deep state, all this weird, you know, made up conspiracy theories, kind of gibberish. And it's just like, these are your own people, man. Like, if you think your own people are against you, maybe you should look in the mirror, because there's probably good reason for that.
Yeah. But you know what the interesting thing is you know, we've been talking about this almost from the beginning of this administration, how, you know, the people around him are going to hold things back, how the CIA and the FBI aren't going to give him certain information out of fear that he would leak it. You know, basically all of the things that we've been saying, and people say, no, you're being conspiratorial. All of that stuff seems to be completely accurate.
Right. And a lot of the stuff, like when I started investigating Trump in early 2016, a lot of those things that we uncovered, I mean, it wasn't easy. Like you go through hundreds and hundreds of hours of film and photos, and you have to piece it together, and then you have to present that story as in, like, here's what happened, here's why this was wrong. And so imagine doing that thousands of times and it all starting to just fit together. And then the public reporting mixed with private intelligence and things like that combined with the Mueller report and everything going. I mean, like, there's so many things going on, but none of this, nothing would have happened without the resistance. Like, that's a fact. There would have been no Mueller. There would have been no impeachment hearings. There would have been no winning the House back. There would have been the resistance track record now is one of the most phenomenal in any political movements ever in American history. And we are united. We won in Virginia. We won in Kentucky. We won in Alabama, statewide on all fronts. And so we can win anywhere. We just need to, you know, we need to keep pushing. I know that was I digressed a little bit. Sorry.
No. I mean, you're right. I mean, it comes down to the organizing, and it's going to come down to people getting out to the polls. And I'm hoping in 2020 that there is a clean sweep and we're able to clean up the mess that has been the last 2.5 or 3 years. But you know, what's interesting is you brought up a second ago there the Mueller report, and you know, the one thing that, you know, this week has just gotten completely lost is Roger Stone is going on trial. And a lot of the stuff that came out of the Mueller report is being presented in there because it was redacted from the original report because of this trial. And again, you know, we're finding out, yeah, there was coordination. There was lots of back and forth between Russian assets and Roger Stone and his types and with WikiLeaks, and all that stuff's factual. You know, all of the stuff that Republicans were saying was fantasy and it was all conspiracy. It is being displayed in a court of law right now. And, well, we're really not paying attention to it.
Right. I was the guy who reported Roger Stone to the FBI for treason in October of 2016. And I remember when we were deciding on what we could be able to do, because we had audio evidence of Roger Stone admitting that he advised Trump directly, combined with other evidence that we had. And it was interesting because, you know, it got news coverage or whatever, but it was so close to the election that it was not really looked at again. And we just kept on digging into him in coordination with other groups. And then there were obviously a lot of reporting and whatnot. But the bottom line is, it's exactly how we didn't have to come up with stories, because a lot of the narrative was there in photos and videos and social media. And we were able to craft it, work backwards from there a lot of times, and then have the evidence in front of us and not have to make up a story because the story was presented itself. We just had to put together the pieces. And you know, with Roger Stone, that's one of those things where we just kept on pounding on the door. And, you know, none of this is magic. Like, there's nothing that we could ever make up and present as evidence and them get charged or them go to trial over, ever. None of that. There's no kind of backdoor conspiracy to try and take over or anything. That's complete nonsense. But I can tell you that are there people working hard to hold the people who are breaking laws accountable? Absolutely, around the clock. And, you know, I'm one of those people, and I know you are too.
But, you know, you look at some of the testimony today, or some of the questions, and I don't even know if they were really questions. It was more like testimony coming from Republican legislators, you know, about the Mueller report and how, they were going after, you know, Carter Page and Roger Stone and these folks. And I'm going, but they were guilty.
Right. And Carter Page has his own problems. You know, it's interesting. I remember when we did my first report on Trump's Russian ties, some of the names that were in there were Flynn, Stone, Don Jr., Manafort, Gates, a few of the oligarchs, the Agalarovs, who are the people, the pop star, the Russian pop star, and his dad, friends with Putin, and Tillerson. And the list goes on and on. And it all kind of just added up into this configuration of, like, okay, what in the world is happening here, where we're able to have someone slip through that is this corrupt, that is this crazy? And I think, you know, he's a disease that needs to be removed from office, and then we can work on the rest as well. But, you know, man, I'll just tell you, it's going to be long days like this over and over again. This is that part of marathon where you don't know how far you've ran, but you're not near the finish line yet.
Yeah. So what were the key moments today for you? You know, for those who may not have spent all day watching like we do, what were the key moments in your mind?
I think that the opening statement from Schiff moving into the questioning from the counsel was really important for the story to be told in a very clear way. I think that the way that they presented themselves, the witnesses, was very professional. It was very viable and credible. And I think that, that continuous kind of stretch, that was really important. I think that a lot of the Democratic questioning, it was obvious that they were organized, that they knew what they wanted to get to. And there were a lot of facts that they were able to dig into and reveal some more evidence that they hadn't had before. Another phone call with Trump, another not involving Ukraine, but regarding Ukraine, with Sondland, that was overheard on the phone or whatnot. I mean, this is it was a crazy day, but not many like one timer kind of shots. There was the moment where they were talking about, as you talked about, where they said, oh, okay, Welch said in response to someone saying, well, you know, we want to get to the person we want to have the person testify who started this all.
Yep.
And then Welch said, well, then, yeah, Trump should come here. And they were obviously insinuating the whistleblower.
Well, no, I mean, Jim Jordan came right out and said he believes the whistleblower started it all, and he should be sitting there right now. And you go, you know, to me at this point, I don't think the whistleblower is at all. I don't think you need him. I think you got everything else. To me, you don't even need to know who the whistleblower was, and I don't think you should, because I want to make sure that future whistleblowers are protected so that we find stuff out like this. If we allow the Republicans to out this whistleblower and all of the stuff that we know is going to happen happens, the next person who's in a position that sees something like this is not going to say something.
Right. They didn't, you know, it's like, okay, you can investigate shortly, like, who called 911, who called this shooting or whatever. And if someone dialed 911, maybe you look at them real quick to make sure that they weren't involved, and then, you know, but then you're done with them. Like, and if you want to have them testify against the people that had committed the crime, you want to make sure they're protected as well. It's the same sort of thing. This is to prevent bullies like this from being able to do exactly what he's doing right now. It's just going to get much, much worse. And they're flirting with disaster, because this is what was really going to happen here is this is just going to provoke more people to come forward much sooner.
Yeah. And the thing is, what's interesting to me is, you know, Trump's response is always fire somebody. I mean, there was the report the other day that he was going to fire Atkinson, the guy who actually did, I think, the most important person in this whole scenario, or he took the complaint and he moved it forward and said, look, this is an urgent complaint. He wanted to fire him. Now there's rumors again he wants to fire Mulvaney. Down the line, I'm waiting for that Saturday night massacre to happen where Trump just loses his mind and Twitter isn't enough and there's, you know, no nanny there to quell his impulses, and he just fires everybody.
Yeah, and I spoke to I spoke to the communications chief, the former communications chief for Mattis, and he talked about his tenure there. And as shocking as it can be, the tweets that Trump had sent out with his staff, they had no idea about the transgender ban. They had no idea about a lot of the tweets that he had sent out, a lot of the messaging that came out of the White House. And that's terrifying when their Pentagon doesn't know what they're going to do military-wise and it's announced via Twitter. I mean, that's another backdoor, back channel kind of way for him to skirt around any kind of protection for us. And I just think, you know, we're going to have to rewrite some laws here once Democrats take control of the Senate and the White House.
So also today, which happened, which I thought was a giant, you know, middle finger to the Democrats and to our democracy as a whole. You have Donald Trump holding a press conference with the leader of Turkey, who is a murderous dictator, this Erdogan. And at the exact minute Schiff is having his press conference, and the first question that gets thrown out, he calls on someone from this OANN, this really right-wing, startup cable network. And they throw him the softball of, well, gee, what did you think about the impeachment hearing? And he goes off while standing next to a murderous dictator, talking about how it's a witch hunt and all of that. I just thought it was, one, a giant middle finger to our democracy, but two, just childish.
Yeah, he really knows how to pick them. I don't know if a lot of our allies would be willing to stand next to Trump at this point. I'm not sure who he could actually get. It was just pathetic. And the funny thing was, there's a lot of these things Trump does are intentional. And so when he had, you know, Schiff comes out, he starts his press conference, gets like a minute and a half in, and I had different screens on it at the time on different stations to monitor what was going on. And you saw that Fox News cut away and went to Trump, because Trump walked out about a minute and a half after Schiff started his press conference, which obviously was intentionally timed. And the other major network stayed with Schiff. And so that I noticed that was a nice little tide. His little propaganda only worked with Fox News. And even there, they were talking about how today was even, as in it didn't move the needle at all, which means they basically saying that Democrats won the day. And I don't think anybody wins. I think America wins when the Democrats win nowadays. And I don't know who the hell wins when it's the Republicans win. I guess it's Trump and Putin.
Yeah, he also said something during his time with Erdogan about oil. Evidently, we've got the oil. According to him, we've got the oil. The oil is safe. Our troops are guarding the oil. I'm going, but wait a second. isn't that a violation of international? Did we just grab their oil? Or am I missing something?
Yeah, it's cute how he keeps on redefining the rules, because I thought that he pulled out of there completely. I thought he got all our troops home, and he didn't. Most of them are not going home. They're just being transferred. So, it's just, we gave away a strategic part of a strategic country. I mean, like, it just doesn't make any sense. And we're still there guarding oil fields, probably, for corporations and less for America, more to, I don't know, do something that puts money into Trump's wallet. Like, I'm sure he's figured out a way to make money off of that somehow. He's how to make money off of everything else. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Me neither. The last question I've got for you, there was a lot of talk about, the Republicans keep bringing up people that they want to come in front of the committee. Obviously, they want the whistleblower just so they can out them. Hunter Biden's name kept coming up. And, is he qualified? And I didn't hear any Democrat point to Ivanka or Jared and ask the question if they're qualified to be in the White House or if Don Jr. should be allowed to be anywhere near the White House grass. I just thought it was interesting that, they kept pointing at Hunter Biden, but nobody kind of threw the other one around.
Yeah, I think Democrats didn't want to take the spotlight away from the testimony today. And I think that any mention of the Trump kids would be what Trump goes straight after. And he'd take that and run with it and run over the messaging. Be like, you can't go after my children, mixed with like Ivanka helped create 140 million jobs in America. He's just going to make up stuff from now on. And we have to get used to everything coming out of the White House being a complete and total bizarre lie with no intention of helping America. And for some reason, Republicans are going along with it as co-conspirators. And, I just know that.